We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Subscribers to NewOrleans.football get all of our news analysis and extra podcasts and so much more on the site right now. We have our final mock drafts, where we put our actual final predictions for Pick 14. Make sure you check that out. And we break down what's going on with Ryan Ramczyk, Marshawn Lattimore, and so much more. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Use the code NOF for 20% off your first payment. Welcome back to another episode of NewOrleans.football, presented by PJ's Coffee. We're coming to you from our studio right next door to Matt Bowers on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. If you're in the market for a new car, make sure you check out my guy. He's got dealerships all over the region. He'll get you the best prices, the best customer care, the best of everything. Make sure you go check him out today for your new or pre-owned car needs. And stick around. We'll be right back with the show. We got a lot of stuff that we're breaking down, getting you ready for the draft, and so much more. We'll be right back after this. The NewOrleans.football show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. And it's now time for our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers has a great engagement salon. So if you are in the market for an engagement ring, make sure you go and check them out. They got rings in all sizes, all prices. They will get you set up right. And while you're there, take a look at their Florida Lee necklace and earrings that you now see on the screen. The earrings are priced at $1,100 and the necklace is $1,350. Tell them that NOF sent you.
All right, guys, lead topic. What positions do the Saints draft best and worst? Last week, we took a deep dive into every draft pick the Saints made since Jeff Ireland got here in 2015. So now let's take an overall look and see if we think they're actually better or worse at drafting, and should it affect their strategy going into this year's draft?
I got a few here. I got a few candidates. Safety, they've been really good at, but they've been really good at it after day one. Marcus Williams was a second rounder. Von Bell was a second rounder. C.J. Gardner-Johnson was a fourth rounder. Jordan Howden, a fifth rounder. So that's a lot of hits with good currency. Defensive tackle, pretty good. David Onyemata, big hit in the fourth round. Brzee, a good first round pick. Rankin's a decent first round pick. Tyler Davison in the fifth. The guys that have meant the most, though, cornerback has Lattimore and Adebo, Alante Taylor, P.J. Williams. Receiver has Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, big hits with big value. That's the discussion for me. Traquan, Kwan, A.T. Perry. Man, I think I'm going to go with corner.
Corner? I mean, I think...
DB for sure.
Yeah, it's DB for sure. For me, it's safety. I think safety is their top position. And I don't even know if that's the drafting of. I think it might be just like the development too. And their coaching at that position has just been so strong just throughout this whole tenure. DA was coaching there. Chris Richard's a good coach. They have good coaches there now with Marcus Robertson. And you know, they've just done a really good job of coaching at that position. Joe Woods is also a DB's coach by trade. He's there. I think that the development has just been something that's been really, really good at that spot. But I'm with you. I think it's either that or cornerback. Cornerback, I give safety a slight lean just because the assets haven't necessarily... Like, Jordan Howden is a fifth-round hit.
Yeah.
Is kind of a big one for me. And that kind of tilts it a little bit. But I can't argue against it either way. Running back might end up being one, too, if Kendra Miller ends up developing.
I kind of had a dividing line. The other one I had above the dividing line was guard and center. They've only drafted four of them in the Ireland era. One was Eric McCoy, one of their bigger hits. Ruiz, not bad. Will Clapp, good hit in the seventh round. Nick Saldivari, the jury's still out. So it's kind of funny. There's a small sample size. I think what's most important, though, what you're judged on, what you get hired and fired for probably, is what you do with the primo picks. And I think everyone watching this discussion is probably going to say they miss on defensive ends. They miss on offensive tackles. They've definitely, with primo picks, they hit on Lattimore. They hit on Thomas. They hit on Olave. So that gives a little boost to those positions.
How much do we drop wide receiver because of Traquan Smith? Because I think if Traquan didn't exist, I think you're kind of maybe putting wide receiver near the top of the list because the Olave, Mike Thomas duo.
Yeah.
And then the other guys were picked late enough that I think it kind of washes out a little bit.
Doesn't matter to me. He might as well have been undrafted. Yeah. A.T. Perry looks like
another hit. Yeah.
No, I my very unofficial ranking system that I had here to take notes to have this conversation was I have all caps for the big hits. I have italics for the misses, and I just have Traquan in regular print. I mean, I wish he was better, but I don't put him in the he takes away category either, really.
I think wide receiver is kind of like a sneaky candidate for the best one here.
Yeah.
Because it is like you have Mike Thomas is arguably the best pick in team history. Now, the re-signing, you can go with whatever you want on that, but the first draftable years, the first rookie contract, unbelievable value for a second round pick. Then, you know, the injuries and all that stuff come. And now Chris Olave is on that same trajectory. We might kind of be hating a little bit by going default DB. Like, I could be convinced. Someone could talk me into wide receiver. Like, I'm on the cusp of buying that argument.
Well, do you think, what kind of grade do you give Olave? Do you give that an overachieving grade, or do you give that a he was worth the 11th pick in the draft grade?
I think they made an aggressive pick and have gotten aggressively good results.
Yeah.
So I think it's met it, but the expectations are really high. It's not like he kind of like backed into it. Marshawn kind of met the same thing with a really high pick at that spot. And
same spot.
He met it. Yeah. He met it as well. I think the expectations are sky high at that spot. So
yeah, Thomas is a bigger hit than Adebo. So receivers ahead of corner for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not giving Alante Taylor and PJ Williams enough credit to move it ahead of the Michael Thomas pick. Yeah.
But where are you at? Which way? If you got to go safety, wide receiver, or cornerback?
It's easy. It's wide receiver.
You think it's wide receiver?
It's wide receiver, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's definitely wide receiver based on Mike, based on Chris, and then even the people that the Saints have provided to the league, like Brandon Coleman, it's wide receiver.
What's really interesting about wide receiver for the – yeah, if you throw Rashid Shaheed and Deontay Hardy into the mix,
yeah,
and if we're killing that position.
And if we're giving credit for Jordan Howden as
even
a fifth-round pick.
Even Tommy Lee Lewis.
You got A.T. Perry is the sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sixth.
Yeah. What's really interesting about receivers, they had a huge drought where – between Michael Thomas and Olave, Traquan was the only one they took for however many years that was. And I remember doing a story one year where they were the only – they got down to being the last team in the league that went like three straight drafts without drafting a receiver. Like they went three straight drafts without drafting a receiver. Only five over those 9 years is kind of a low number. So we'll see if they get back in that number this year.
Even look at the inconsistency in quarterback play and the receivers have still been able to produce. I feel like – they're able to overcome that and make do with what they have. So speaking of receivers, let's go on the Knicks' top picks that the Saints have had since 2015.
Yeah, I mean, you got Alvin, Ryan.
Four different positions.
Ryan Ramczyk, Mike Thomas, Marshawn Lattimore. I mean, it's spreading the board here. But here's the thing. These are, at the beginning, this cluster of success in the draft. Like, they
that
were all those two drafts, I think, were just so foundational for them. And every time we're talking about a really great pick, they're kind of coming from those. Now you got Chris Olave in the mix as well. And hopefully we kind of start to see a little bit of a trend back toward that this year with whatever they do at 14. But yeah, they were outstanding there for a period of time. But these were the guys that I had at the top of the list. I kind of feel like I should have put Mike first. I feel like Mike might be the best
pick. We had
pick.
That discussion via text. It's like, And also, you did a different thing when you graded because some of their guys like Trey Hendrickson and Alex Anzalone didn't get a lot of points for you because it didn't happen with the Saints.
Yeah,
but if you're doing it as you just made the pick at the time, and once the scouts leave the room on draft night, anything that happens after that is no longer their fault. Thomas is the number one pick on that.
Thomas
list.
And yeah, look, I had Trey Hendrickson kind of down a little bit. Like under that criteria, he's higher, but I feel like it had to happen with the Saints because it's not a great pick for the Saints.
Yeah, you also do need to know what your coaches want to work with.
Yeah, they gotta have success here a little bit. So, but yeah, if we're just grading the scouting, like the scouting of this kind of shakes up the list a little bit. And
and Thomas is definitely number one.
Yeah, Thomas or Alvin. I think Alvin's still there. Yeah, Alvin's still there. Fair. Like he's had more longevity. It's kind of. Mm-hmm. It's I don't know. Mike was the greatest of all time for a period of time, though. So, I don't know. I don't know how to grade it, but I ended up going Alvin first. I feel shaky on it, but now I'm talking myself back into Alvin. Maybe I should have moved Mike up ahead of Ramczyk and then slid Ramczyk over one. But again, I feel like Ramczyk had that little bit of longevity. So, like, I was just kind of doing it that way a little bit. Marshawn at four feels like a good spot for him.
First position that you hit twice on that list might have been corner, Lattimore, and then a Debo. No, Thomas and Olave, because you had Olave sixth.
My thing with Lattimore, and I feel like you could make an argument that he should be higher, but I feel like Lattimore had the potential to be, and this isn't necessarily scouting or drafting or scouting or whatever, but I feel like Lattimore had the potential to be potentially like the greatest of all time, and it just never got there. Like the practice habits weren't right for a while. Those have shifted in recent times. You've seen a little bit more consistency on the field, but you haven't seen the consistency with staying on the field now. So it's just kind of been like a cornucopia of just minor disappointments where he's still great, but there's still a little bit of something, you know, pulling him down just a little bit every single year. And I just feel like he never got on the right side of that. And even if he does now, I feel like age is going to start to prevent that a little bit. So this kind of might be the last year for him to be just to have a Revis type season. And I don't know if that's going to happen.
One thing that just dawned on me, and this isn't either a plus or a minus, but I know people hate on the Saints when they draft somebody who has injuries in their history and then they deal with injuries, that Marshawn Lattimore fell to them because of that like hamstring injury. And Ryan Ramczyk had the, was it knee? I don't think it was knee. Was it back? I don't know why I'm drawing a blank now. But those were two guys that fell to the Saints in part because people had medical grades on them. And for a long time, that wasn't a problem. So sometimes you're cherry picking on whether you should have taken a guy who had an injury history or not. And, you know, although now it has come back full circle on them.
All right. Now let's take a look at the worst picks. So we have Stephon Anthony, Tommy Stevens, Rick Leonard, Gary Grayson. I mean,
one position is on there twice. Yeah. Does that mean quarterback is the answer to this question?
It could be. It, I mean, yeah, it absolutely is. They haven't They haven't drafted anybody that's made it to year two.
You had Haener and Book, four quarterbacks.
They haven't, and Haener will. Haener's going to make it. He'll be the first one, but they have not had a quarterback make it to year two on that initial contract. Now, they've had guys leave and come back, get cut and come back, go to the practice squad. They haven't had anybody stay on the 53-man roster for two seasons in this era, in the Sean Payton era. You know, it's just, it's a position that they have not drafted well. But look, that's probably everybody. But the thing that I kind of, I don't know, I guess would make it stand out a little bit is that they're, was an organizational reputation of having quarterback mastery in their pocket. And
we just saw it today when Sean Payton traded for Zach Wilson that everyone gives him credit for tutoring young quarterbacks.
But where?
Tony Romo and then ...
Drew Brees, I guess. But like, I think Drew was going to be great regardless. Yeah. I think Drew was going to be great independent of it. I think him and Sean were the perfect marriage in that I'm not taking anything away from anybody. I think them finding each other probably helped them both get to, you know, the heights that they're at now. But I think that Sean probably would have been a good coach without Drew. Yeah. Drew was going to be great without Sean.
Yeah, it's not to take away from Sean Payton. It just plain didn't happen here. It doesn't mean it couldn't happen. He didn't have a lot to work with. What's interesting is if you split up defensive end and outside linebacker being the tweener position that like fits a 3-4 better than a 4-3, outside linebackers are worse. I have Davis Toll and Haole Kakaha there. You could argue that Zach Bond and Caden Ellis also belong in that category, although they had a vision to move them to linebacker. But tight ends, they've only drafted two. Adam Trautman, they paid a lot for. Alizé Mack, they paid nothing for. Quarterback, I had near the bottom of the list. But I think the two everyone's here to hear us talk about is offensive tackle and defensive end. Are they good or bad at drafting offensive tackles and defensive ends?
So here's my take on this. I don't... They haven't hit enough, but I think so. There's an answer, and then there's the deeper logical. Let's pick this apart and get to the truth of it.
That's what we do here, right?
Yeah, they're bad at they're bad at drafting them. Now everything we're going to say from here, there's going to be some idiot that's like, stop making excuses. Nobody's making excuses. We're just trying to explain what they do here, and I think the reason that they haven't hit on these picks is because of where they have been drafting. And I think when you have to get a defensive end or a starting left tackle, those are usually spots that you aren't drafting in the top 10. Your odds of getting a sure thing are extremely low. So you have to start
taking...
There's
no Miles Garrett or Joe Thomas on their register because they never picked first or second.
So you have to start taking risks. And then you're making trades for guys and you're taking risks on people because you have to fill that need because... You don't want to go into free agency and pay top dollar for people that underperform. So you're trying to build a team. And by trying to build a team, you're drafting these guys. And I think when you start drafting people 11, 12, 19, where did they pick Marcus Davenport? 14th?
14th.
14th. And Penning, Peyton 19th. Turner. Peyton Turner was in the 20s.
29th.
Yeah. So when you start drafting people in those ranges, you're taking significant risks the more so you go down. So, like, Trevor Penning's a risk at 19. He has somebody, you're looking at the tape, you see the traits, but you're projecting it, and then you project it, and the projection's wrong. And that's a really hard thing to try to figure out. I understand how they get it wrong. The fact is, though, they still have gotten those things wrong. But I don't think that it's like you're bad at drafting because you miss on a pass rusher in the 20s. Like, I think it's just really hard to draft a pass rusher in the 20s that's actually productive. So now you have the choice between going for upside or someone that just doesn't have very much ceiling. And if you're making a pick, the Saints tend to like upside with their prospects more so than just like, this is what it's going to be. They're fine. We'll take them. I think they always favor the upside. I think when you chase the upside a little bit, you miss, but you can't really get a big hit if you don't chase the upside. So it's kind of a either or proposition. They've gotten it wrong too often. Getting it wrong, I think, is extremely, extremely set back this team. But I don't think it's an easy thing to have success in that range at those positions.
All right, there are two different conversations. So let's start with defensive end. Davenport in the first round paid a lot. Used two first round picks there, got him at 14. Turner, the other first rounder, 29th. Were they just medical misses, do you think? Both of them? Just medical? I mean, Davenport had the personality traits where his confidence waned and stuff like that. But those aren't necessarily huge scouting misses to me either.
No, like, they aren't.
The risk was medical, and they came up, whatever. They rolled seven. They rolled craps both times. But
yeah, I think on
they
that,
had good visions for how they would fit this defense. I'm tough. I'm asking the question, not making a statement.
I'm reluctant to say this because it could be taken as like mean-spirited. I feel like Davenport was partially a personality mess.
Yeah.
And I think the personality with the adversity, I think the concoction of the two, it became so much worse. And yeah,
I don't feel that way about Turner. We compare them a lot.
I don't.
But man. Yeah.
No, I think
Turner's
Turner's a medical miss and bad luck. I feel like Davenport was medical bad luck, and then the personality, I think, just kind of when adversity hit on the field, off the field, on social media, I feel like it just kind of torpedoed him really quickly.
To be fair, though, Davenport is also in another tier with talent. Like, absolutely. We have not seen Turner reach.
We haven't seen
Davenport
Turner on the field
had
enough
the talent
to, even know.
To be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the biggest hits on this list.
Davenport has the talent to be one of the best defensive ends like in team history or whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, on the list, not at the top of the list, but like in the conversation, it just never happened for him. But the sheer talent was there. I don't even know what Turner's talent is, honestly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, we've seen little glimmers of it, but he's
I don't
just
hate that
off
pick.
The
I've
so
always
much.
Said just for his own sanity and like the to have a fair discussion about him, he should have been picked 40th. He should have not been picked 29th. There's such a stigma. He would pick 40th. Everybody would have been, oh, I love it. I love the value they got from that Houston edge rusher in round two because he was a first rounder. He was judged different. But I asked that question because Trey Hendrickson was obviously a scouting hit. They didn't know what to do with him coaching wise. And he did take a long time to develop. Al-Kadeem Muhammad, same thing. He succeeded somewhere else. And Isaiah Foskey, the jury's still out. Those are the only five defensive ends they've drafted over the last 9 years. None of them is a Stephon Anthony or like they have not proven they don't know what they're looking for in a defensive end. They just haven't. They haven't made it work. Offensive tackle is a little different. Penning so far has been a big miss. Rick Leonard's one of the biggest misses they ever had in round four. Ramchek, a huge hit. Pete somewhere in between. Landon Young somewhere in between. Anything Ramchek, Pete, first rounders, Penning, first rounders, three first rounders, Rick Leonard, Landon Young. The only five offensive tackles they've taken. Anything that adds to your anything they should have learned from those five picks, anything that helps inform your decision when you're almost certainly going to pick an offensive tackle this week?
No.
Yeah.
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, get the sure thing. That's the only thing I can say about it is get the sure thing. That's the thing that I think I've learned from it is that you were chasing something with Penning. I mean, Rick Leonard's just like, it was an athletic talent projection. And then you're what? It was Lenny Young, who was the other one, and then Pete. Pete was kind of a sure thing, and the floor on that was fine, like to a degree. I think
do have to wonder what would have happened if Pete just was left tackle and they had an opening at left tackle, and that's the position he played in high school and college.
It's a fair thought experiment. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting to think about, actually. I think he was fine. I think the floor on Pete, even when Pete was a fan base pariah, like I thought he was still okay. It was just like the way he lost was horrible. Like he never had just like a, he was never losing, you know, 21-20. The score, like the final score when he gave up a pressure, it was like losing like 50-10. Like it just always looks so bad.
The five worst things that ever happened to Drew Brees, they happened behind him. It was like also the worst moments too. But you're right on the sure thing. I mean, we talked about like how we like a guy like Tyler Guyton. There's the BYU guy, Kingsley. So like if you get into that range where you're taking him at 29 or 32, or Patrick Paul, is that the guy from here? Mm-hmm. If that's the offensive tackles are taken, the degree of missing goes way up. If they take one at 14, especially with the assortment of choices that they have this year, I believe they can hit on that pick. And this history does not – the Trevor Penning miss does not make me think – that they are bound to miss on these absolute blue chippers they have to choose from this year.
If they choose to wait to address that need at 45, or if they trade back, they deserve zero grace for it if it goes wrong. Because the evidence is there, and you're choosing. And I think at 14 this year, the guy you're getting in most other drafts, even if it's the fourth, fifth one on the list, typically that guy's going to be one or two in any other draft. Yeah. It's that deep this year. If you are choosing to dabble in the lower pole, the Trevor Penning level pole, the you know, Andrews Pete level pole, like you deserve whatever happened. Like it's almost, I mean, you can't do it. Like I just don't think you can do it. That's the lesson that's learned here.
The only position that we didn't go through was linebacker. It had the worst Stephon Anthony, your absolute worst pick, but had some hits in Pete Werner, Caden Ellis, Anzalone for another team, DeMarco Jackson, so-so for a day three pick. Zach Bond didn't reach his potential. So I have it square in the middle of these.
Yeah, and I think overall, linebacker is one of those positions where they just really aren't. There aren't good players anymore. Like, there really aren't good linebackers anymore. Like, they're far and few between. You know, there's the Demario Davises of the world, but I think arguably linebacker is the worst position in the NFL, like top to bottom. I don't think that there's a lot of very good players at that position.
Well, whoever the Saints do pick, make sure you're locked into NewOrleans.football to find out who they are. Our next segment is brought by Jouer Productions. If the Saints miss out on their draft needs, which is like offensive tackle, pass catcher, do the Saints dip back into the free agency market to get, you know, a veteran such as Mekhi Becton, Andres Pete on the offensive line, Hunter Renfrow, or Tyler Boyd at receiver, defensive end, nose tackle, tight end, just somebody to help the team? Which one of those positions do you feel most comfortable about going get as a veteran in free agency?
It's interesting because I don't know that they can address their need at wide receiver with what's out there. Like, you can add a guy that helps, but I don't know that you can address the Mike Thomas type big possession yak receiver. Mike wasn't great yak, but they need that yak player. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you're getting the defensive end. There probably is a nose tackle out there that can help. I don't think you can get the two-way tight end out there. Oddly enough, I kind of feel like there's a couple options on the offensive line that could be fine. Like, not problem solvers, but fine. Yeah. And I think
fine is what's out there at almost every position.
Like, you just know, you just kind of know. Maybe it's because we know one. Yeah. We know one. And it's just like, yeah, that guy could play, and he could probably play to a level to where you aren't necessarily noticing the void every single time they take the field.
Yeah. I mean, the main reason I want the Saints to draft an offensive tackle is because I like what they have to choose from at offensive tackle. If the board looked different, if there was like one offensive tackle and you had to squint to see it, then I'd be like, just go get the best player available and bring back Andres Pete and see what Mekhi Becton's got. I would probably be advocating for that. They might have already done that if they didn't like what this draft class had to offer. So I agree with you. There seems to be some options there. I'm kind of the opposite on wide receiver, though. Like, their wide receiving core is so hard to peg because it's, in one sense, the position I feel best about on the Saints roster right now, certainly long-term. Chris Olave feels like a bona fide number one receiver, depending on what your definition of that means. Rashid Shaheed is a borderline number two receiver. A.T. Perry, young talent you're excited about. I even think Cedric Wilson belongs in a group of four. Like, I don't feel like a desperation to add an alpha to that group. I will take an Andres Pete level receiver to fill out that group. But they have such a big need for the physical possession guy, and they kind of don't really have the slot receiver Willie Snead, Lance Moore. Like, I mean, maybe a Tyler Boyd, maybe a Hunter Renfrow could fill one of those roles. I agree with you. Nose tackle, I think you can find. Defensive end, I probably wouldn't even bother. Like, I don't know that you're going to find anyone who's better. They have a lot of candidates. They have Isaiah Foskey and Peyton Turner and Carl Granderson and Cam Jordan and Tano Passanio. Just added Chase Young. I don't know that you just need a seventh guy. You need a guy who's better than all those guys, but I wouldn't even probably dip into free agency for that. I'm just very curious, how much money do they plan to spend? Does it have to be a league minimum guy, or will they actually go out and pay someone like $4 million a year, or is that something they're just not doing this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think my thing with like the wide receivers, I think they have a ton of talent right now, but if you're asking me to close my eyes and envision somebody making a catch on the backside of the formation, I don't see it. Like, I don't know who that guy is right now. That I would at least feel comfortable, you know, almost closing my eyes and throwing to him because he's going to be open. And I just don't think that they have it. So, yeah, I mean, I think they kind of got to go out and get someone. But the reason that we're saying that is instead of just go out and get Andres Pete and then draft your receiver at 14 is because we're talking about them building a team. Like, it's plugging gaps right now. Yeah. You need those guys. We want them to build a team. And the value of that position, I think, is just so much higher. And the need for long-term answers at that position are so much higher because you have two at least at wide receiver, and you can plug that gap another way. So you can get the Andres Pete level player at wide receiver probably, maybe even in the draft, and you go for the high-end guy for a tackle at 14.
The one position we haven't mentioned is safety. Maybe they need another guy. I don't know if they do, but what's so funny, we're talking about the Andres Pete level guy. Some team that misses on safety in the draft is probably going to sign Marcus May to a like veteran minimum deal. I mean, because there's so many talented safeties still out there. Jamal Adams, Justin Simmons, Eddie Jackson, Quandre Diggs, Micah Hyde, some injury issues in there. But like by the time you get to Marcus May, he's not getting paid at this point. So that position is just taking a beating this year. I feel like if you feel like you're a body down at safety, that's probably the cheapest place to go get one right now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, y'all stick around. We're going to hit a quick break. Make sure you check out our great sponsors, and we'll be right back to New Orleans Football.
Shrimp remoulade combos are back at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. Zesty shrimp remoulade served with fried shrimp, catfish, or softshell crab starting at $10.99. Or try one of our spring specials, catfish Lafitte, or lemon caperfish with crab meat now at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family-owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
Welcome back to our new studio at Veterans Memorial Boulevard. It's time now for our Hard High Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey segment. Nick is going to break down some film on, you know, offensive line prospect that the Saints should look into. Today we have Olu Fashanu.
Yeah, great player. Somebody that I really like a lot for the team. I think he might be the ideal candidate really for the Saints at 14. I think if all things shake out and play out how they want it to play out, I think he's the guy that I would want to pick at that position. He kind of has a little bit of everything. He gives you all the plays that you want. And yeah, let's get the tape up and we'll take a look at it. Just a little highlight roll here, number 74. And you just kind of see some of the things he does. Now, I think there are a handful of things that he could do a little bit better, but he's athletic. He moves well. He's incredibly strong on the left side. Sometimes his pad level is a little bit out of whack, but he's a willing player. Was also a captain, which is a huge thing for this team. They love guys that are mature in the locker room that can be those types of leaders. And I think the Saints need more of those players as part of this system. You go through, I spent some time watching all of his plays this week. I did not see him give up a single sack in his collegiate career. Now, there were a handful of games where I thought that he could have been a little bit better. If you want to find an example of like kind of the underbelly of his college reel, watch the Ohio State game from this most recent season. I think that's one where he gave up six pressures, but overall, an incredible player. You know, there's some projectability that has to be done in the run game, and I think there's a handful of things there that you could want to see him do a little bit better. You don't really see any outside zone stuff. Sometimes that, you know, there's a little bit of inconsistency there, but he can get out and move a little bit. And I think that's a huge thing in this scheme. I think any of the stuff he needs to pick up, he will be able to pick up. Oddly enough, the only real question mark about him is that he has 8.5-inch hands. And I have no idea what that means.
I don't know either, but it's crazy.
It's insane. It's very small for a person his size. And you know, look, I think for a defensive end,
his wingspan is fine. His arm length is
strength
fine.
Is crazy too. Yeah. I think the only thing that I would really be worried, I would be worried about that more, I think, if he was on the other side, because there's a lot of hand combat and a lot of hand stuff that you're doing as an end, like as a O tackle, you're kind of just getting your hands on somebody and then your arms are doing the work. So, you know, you could have a couple stubs, you know, just
did he avoid holding penalties because of his tiny hands when you watched him?
Maybe that helps. Maybe that helps. Yeah. It didn't seem to be an issue at all. But I think that's the only, but then you start to look and there just aren't a lot of guys his size with the hand that size. So it kind of makes him unique. I think it's something that doesn't matter, but it is something that I think is worth pointing out, because if things do go wrong, maybe that's something that ends up being a factor. But if they were to draft him, that's not something where I'm going to him on day one and being like, How do you play with these little hands? Like, I don't think it's anything like that. I don't think it's a story even, but it's something that is going to get mentioned by whatever team drafts him. It's going to be something that's part of that scouting report.
Watching him play, no one looks apart. I mean, I guess Joelt, but I don't even know if Joelt, like, no one just looks apart. If you want to watch a clip reel like that, even if you want to watch every snap, like you project it, I've seen multiple of these draft analysts that always do their projects to be like draft comp Teron Armstead. And I mean, I don't 100% see that, but I think it's their way of saying the combination of power and athleticism.
Yeah. The difference, Teron was a 4.7 guy. Fashanu is a 5.1 guy, I think, in the 40-yard dash. So, I mean, not quite the same, but he is incredibly athletic. Like, yeah. he's not
moves
freakish.
Gracefully or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, he's not freakishly athletic. He's really athletic. And, you know, one of the things that I think might be, this is a very weird thing to say, but I think that's almost a blessing, because someone that size, the freaks are the ones that can't stay healthy. Like the guys that move way too fast for their size. And you're like, how is it possible that somebody's that big and can move that fast? Those are the guys that typically have all kinds of soft tissue injuries.
Yeah.
So him kind of just being in that, like, that edge between like really athletic and freak, like live in the really athletic range.
You might said be a little we're bit not going to do one of these on JC Latham. That's not who we're doing Wednesday.
We no.
Compare. Cause I see even bigger size and like the athleticism for Latham. I think less consistency, but who do you like as the better combination of power and athleticism out of those two?
I hope this doesn't come back to haunt me. And I hope, like, you know, JC Latham doesn't go on to be like the greatest offensive tackle of all time. And then they play like, oh, here, listen to this idiot soundbite, like, you know, down the road.
But freezing cold takes.
I think 100 out of 100 times I'm taking Fashanu.
Yeah.
I am. And it's not necessarily all the stuff on tape. Like there's just as a reporter, there's things you hear and there's things that just make me feel a little bit more comfortable with,
for sure,
with Fashanu. And, you know, like I said, it's the inconsistencies. I said it on the last show, like, there's just a handful of plays sometimes where you're like, he could engage a little bit more there. And I don't know what that means. And I don't know if it's a real issue. And it might just be something, you know, like it's coached out very quickly and all that stuff. But I just feel like if I were scouting these guys, like, I just feel safer taking Fashanu.
I think Fashanu comes with the, outside of Joel, comes with the least question marks out of all these.
He's had some injuries, though, throughout his career. I mean, that's kind of one of the things, but nothing that's crazy, nothing that should scare you away. So, for me, like, that's just, I would lay my money there, and then, you know, we'll see what happens. Like, there's so much that happens after that, coaching, development, atmosphere, all that stuff. But I like his makeup and his tape. Like, the combination of everything, I think, is just a little bit cleaner.
No, I definitely agree with you. I think Fashanu, I mean, if he's still available, the Saints should definitely get him because of his size, his speed, his athleticism. I mean, that's hard to find. And I really liked your point about, you know, guys being too fast and too agile to be able to, you know, keep up with their bodies. Like, I think Fashanu, his size is comparable to the speed that he operates at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his longevity is definitely going to help him down here if he's able to, you know, fit into the system and, you know, get things going. Now we're going to roll on to our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of hand barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. Would another bad draft class escalate the mini rebuild to a total rebuild? Is it time to press the nuclear button?
Maybe. I mean, maybe. If they don't bring in starters, a starter, two, I think two. Mm-hmm. I think you kind of, if they don't bring in a starter at 14, I think it's a disaster situation. And I think at that point, things are falling apart and it's, you just kind of gotta probably do something else. Cause like, I don't think they'll succeed. And then I don't think that the season's going to go the way they want. And then there's just a whole lack of talent behind them. So I don't know. You could lie to yourself and keep being fine with it and probably have, not get a starter at 14, win your 9 games and kind of keep going
say,
with it.
Yeah, we're not firing DA because, you know, the draft picks didn't work out.
But the long tail of that then is just like, there is just such a lack of anything at that. Like it's, they're at a point where you can flip it. You can kind of flip it really quick. If you hit it 14 and 45, you get two exciting players. You can flip it and you're kind of back on track really quickly. But if you don't, it could definitely flip the other way. So I would say, yeah, another bad draft class. And I think it's time to start asking like seriously hard questions.
Here's my problem with this question, though, is the two most important pieces that the Saints have available to them to begin that total rebuild that the questioner is asking about is the 14th pick and the 45th pick in this year. They need, like, I've mentioned this a lot of times. If you watch a show all the time, you're sick of me saying it. No matter which path you prefer, if you want to see them go the Carolina Panthers route and say, we are taking the next 2 years off and we're rebuilding this roster, or if you want to see them try to do what Tampa Bay did last year and sort of rebuild, catch up on the salary cap, and win in the meantime, either way, you need to hit on your draft picks. There's no way out of this that does not include hitting on these draft picks. So, it will escalate it. It will absolutely escalate it. The rebuild is almost inevitable unless 2017 happens again. So if they miss on the draft picks, then it's door C. Neither. They're just terrible.
Yeah, I'll say this. I think they've reached the point where blind faith is gone. Like, yeah. I think they had enough success. And we were kind of talking about those classes early on where, you know, I thought the initial impression of 15 was positive and then it wasn't very kind of quickly. But 16 was great. 17 was great. They got Grace in 18. And then, you know, 19 was
19 decent. Was pretty good. Wasn't was that McCoy and CJ?
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, but then it's kind of like 20, 21, 22.
It's gone.
So I think they're at the point now where it's no longer like, well, they know what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's kind of evaporated a little bit, and it takes a little bit of time to get there. But I think just kind of like the shine on like, oh, it's all going to work out because it always works out. Even when they were 7-9 all those years with Drew and Sean, it just kind of felt like it was close. And I don't think right now that it feels like it's close, and that benefit of doubt still existed then. It's like, well, yeah, they know what they're doing. They're going to get this stuff right. And more often than not, they did, and then all of a sudden, like, they didn't anymore. And, you know, I think that's kind of where they exist. And I think it's just kind of like an interesting progression because, like, I think that once that happens, like, you're very close to it going either way. And you can get it back, but you can lose it just as quick. And it's just, it's a unique thing, I think, for the Saints because I don't think they've existed in this realm for a really long time. Like, it was probably, like, 2004. Like, that was probably 2005. 2006, they were probably still questioning things. But, like, very quickly, like, that shifted, and it's just, it's an interesting place to exist because a lot of times we're like, well, yeah, they're scouting. They know what they're doing. And it's like, well, maybe sometimes they don't, you know? So I think that's just kind of where it exists right now. And it's just kind of fascinating to point that out.
There's from an approach standpoint, which is the main point of this question. I've never been more fascinated to see what trades the Saints make in a draft. Like, can they resist the urge to trade up? Would they actually consider trading down for the first time since 2007? Because there's so many schools of thought, or so many people who subscribe to the school of thought, that this is the most obvious trade down scenario of all time. But then again, they got a hit on the picks. So if you feel like trading down means you're going to get a bunch of meh, then you don't do it. But I'm really, we're going to learn a lot about where this team thinks it is. I
kind of categorically disagree with the idea that this is the most. Like, I just think if you trade down and you miss.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't miss on any draft pick.
If you trade down and you miss, you should get fired. Because, like, if the person that hits at 14 has an answered offensive tackle and you trade down to 20 and don't, I think you should lose your job. Like, I don't think that's okay. Like, I don't think that's an okay thing to do. I think the desperation is so high at that spot that I think trading down and if you miss it, like,
yeah.
I'm no longer going to be able to sit here and say, like, I understand the thought process behind that. I think that is a massive risk to take, to double dip to get what? Like, I don't think, like, if you gave me the option of trading wide receiver 3 to get starting left tackle 1, I'm doing that every time. Oh, I can package 20 in my third wide receiver to get up to 14 to get one of these top guys. I would make that trade every time. Now, you're like, people are arguing the inverse of that, that you should trade the option to have the best left tackle that you could get for wide receiver 3, like, that doesn't add up to me. I think that is a massive risk to take. And I think doing that, I don't know. I just kind of see it a different way. Like, I see where they exist and I see the need is so massive there that if you don't hit on left tackle, I don't think your offense can operate anymore. Like, I just don't think that you can do it. I don't think that you can run the scheme that you want if you don't have the right tackles to do it. I don't think your quarterback can throw the ball if he's under pressure all the time. We just saw it. So to, like, lessen your ability to get the best player at that spot, like, I just think that is such a crazy, risky thing to do that. I just don't agree with it being a no-brainer thing.
Well, no, it's not a no-brainer. None of it is a no-brainer. Two different conversations. One is, I think it's the most obvious time to ever trade down because, A, they have a really old roster, and B, they don't have any third or fourth round picks. So I'm just saying the combination of those two things, this team is really short on young talent, and they only have two picks in the top 150. That is like a perfect storm of when a team should trade down. But I totally agree with you that this is not built like a draft where we think 14 feels like 20. This feels like a rare draft where you can get a special offensive tackle at 14, and the window of special offensive tackles in the 20s is not there. So that should change your approach slightly.
Yeah, because going back to the earlier point, like picking up 14 is almost, and you take a tackle, it's like getting a top 10 pick, where I feel like if you trade down from 14 to 20, like now you're getting
into a different class of offensive tackles.
The petting level tackles. Yeah, the guys that have some warts and you're taking some risks and all that stuff. Like, I agree with the theory of acquiring more picks in general.
14 and 24 in most drafts, sometimes 24 probably hits and 14 doesn't. I agree with that. But for a team that obviously needs to rebuild, not just to try to win 9 games this year, needs to rebuild its future around an offensive tackle, this happens to be a draft class where that tier will last to 14. It will not last to 24.
I think the way, like, one of the ways these draft conversations always get framed too is that everybody talks about everything as if, like, well, if they do this, and then it's like through this prism of like everything's going to work out. And I don't know that there's ever enough negativity in those conversations, like acknowledging how difficult it is to hit on picks. And I would just warn anyone that is like standing on a table screaming for a trade back to just look at the last tackle they drafted, and they traded up to get that dude. Yeah. Like, and they missed there. And I think the category of player you're getting is going to be similar. And I just think I just think that sometimes you gotta realize that, like, when you crack the egg, it's rotten. And they might still crack the egg at 14 and it's rotten, but I like the thought process of taking like your strongest absolute swing at addressing this issue that you chose not to address in free agency, and in fact are allowing the person that started all the games our last year to linger in free agency. So you haven't even like backstopped it with the sure thing that you kind of have. So you just need to do it. Or if you're trading back, you better have Andrus Peat signed right now. Yep. And you're doing what you got to do to mitigate that downside.
The counter argument people are screaming at their TVs right now is, I don't trust you to hit, so take more swings.
Sure.
You know, I'd rather have 3 top 50 picks, because one of them might be Michael Thomas in the second round. One of them might be Alvin Kamara, and you might whiff in the first round. And I totally get that line of thinking. And at the same time, as much as I'm saying I get why you don't trade down and you move into the not sure thing of tackles, I'm hoping that they do not feel compelled to trade up. It's possible. Look, they might sell me if they're like, we had Olu Fashanu graded just as high as Marvin Harrison Jr. He was a top 5 guy for us. We had to have him. Maybe. Could be right. Could be wrong. But I would love it if they were like, no, we thought there were 3 really, really excellent tackles in there. We knew if we stayed patient, we could get him at 14. That's what I'm hoping for the Saints happens, that they get their guy without having to move up for him.
The counter argument to the, you know, I don't trust them to get it right. Like, at least if you're sitting at 14, you're still in the cloud and the safety of the group think. Like,
they're not going to go rogue.
You get back far enough. Like, now that's where, like, it's, well, we like this small school guy better than everybody else. Like, that's kind of where you get into that stuff. So just take the sure thing, man. Like, it's just, it feels like that's what you need to do. And I get it. Like, the idea of trading back. And if they do trade back and they hit twice, then it turns out to be a great decision. But, man, it's just such a risk. And I just don't believe that they're at a place where they should take the risk right now.
Yeah, well, only time will tell what move that the Saints make. But if you're not already, it is time to subscribe to NewOrleans.football for exclusive articles, events. Our members-only event is tomorrow, and that'll do it.